turn to Psalm 16. Psalm 16. 16th Psalm. There's 11 verses. We'll read all 11 verses. Preserve me, O God, for in thee do I put my trust. O my soul, thou hast said unto the Lord, thou art my God. My goodness extendeth not to thee, but to the saints that are in the earth, and to the excellent in whom is all my delight. Their sorrows shall be multiplied that hasten after another God. Their drink offerings of blood will not I offer, nor take up their names into my lips. The Lord is the portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. Thou maintainest my lot. The lines are drawn unto me in pleasant places. Yea, I have a goodly heritage. I will bless the Lord who hath given me counsel. My reins also instruct me in the night seasons. I have set the Lord always before me, because he is at my right hand, I shall not be moved. Therefore my heart is glad, and my glory rejoiceth. My flesh also shall rest in hope, for thou wilt not leave my soul in hell, neither wilt thou suffer thine Holy One to see corruption. Thou wilt show me the path of life. In thy presence is fullness of joy. At thy right hand there are pleasures evermore. Notice that the heading of this psalm is Mictum of David. There are five other psalms that bear that heading. Psalm 56, 57, 58, 59, and 60. And if you were to read those psalms, you would notice that the characteristics of those psalms is prayer, confidence in the Lord, and praise. And of course, that should be our light. Peter makes reference to verses 8 through 11 of this psalm in Acts chapter 2, verses 25 through 28, the day of Pentecost. And he applies verses 8 through 11 to the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ, which of course has led many to conclude that the psalm is a prophecy about Christ. And I certainly believe that that is the case, that you can view this psalm as really the journey of Christ from the Garden of Gethsemane to the cross and ultimately the resurrection. But I don't believe that that's the main point of the psalm, but rather the basis of the main point, which is, and the main point being the way of life for you and I that are saved. And I believe that this psalm is about our personal journey with God, our personal walk with God, which of course starts with Jesus Christ. So what we have in this 16th psalm is the way that you and I ought to live life. And we want to develop the thought of the message from verses 8 and 9. Notice, first of all, in verse 8, there is the word because. And then in verse 9, there is the word therefore. So the word because, of course, states a reason. In this case, he is at my right hand. For this reason, I shall not be moved. So there's a sense of security. This sense of security leads to the therefore of verse 9. So we have this sense of security. It leads to therefore, and then what follows the therefore, my heart is glad, and my glory rejoiceth. My flesh also shall rest in hope. So there's a sense of security. This leads to a gladness of heart, and this leads to a feeling of satisfaction. And it's these things that are the result of the psalm. So I believe we can glean some principles for the obtaining of this sense of security. Principles for obtaining this gladness of heart and this feeling of satisfaction. And that's what we want to do this evening. So we want to speak on principles for obtaining a sense of security, gladness, and satisfaction. So first of all, let's consider these qualities of life. We have a sense of security. We see it here in verse 8. I shall not be moved. There's a tone of confidence in those words. I shall not be moved. The confidence does not have its basis in self. The confidence does not have its basis in any other person. Confidence does not have its basis in circumstances, but the confidence has its basis in the Lord. Notice the phrase, the Lord. Notice the phrase, the Lord always. And then notice, because He is. So you have the Lord always, because He is. And that's the basis of this confidence that the psalmist has, which is, I shall not be moved. He has this sense of security, and his security has its basis in the Lord. Now, this security, of course, is a freedom from fear. It's a freedom from apprehension. It's a sense of certainty. It's a sense of stability. It's a sense of establishment. So there is a sense of security to be had. And every child of God ought to have that sense of security. And again, the foundation of that is not any other person. The foundation is not ourselves. The foundation is not our circumstances. The foundation is the Lord. The next quality is gladness of heart. So you see this sense of security leads to a gladness of heart. Notice verse 9. Therefore, because I shall not be moved, because the Lord is with me, therefore my heart is glad, and my glory rejoiceth. Now, two words, glad, rejoiceth. Two qualities that ought to mark our lives. He says, my heart is glad. Speaking of an inward beaming, an inward cheerfulness, an inward delight, an exhilaration, a happiness, a joy, a radiance. And then he goes on to say, and, or in addition to, my glory rejoiceth. And the word glory there would refer to the tongue. And you might say, well, how do you know that? Well, if you keep a mark in Psalm 16, go over to Acts 2. This is where Peter makes reference to this, and we see how Peter understood this in Acts chapter 2 and verse 26. Therefore did my heart rejoice, and my tongue was glad. Moreover also my flesh shall rest in hope. So my glory rejoiceth. What he's talking about is the expression of the gladness that is in his heart. So we must ask ourselves, to what degree am I glad? To what degree am I glad in my heart? Then we must ask ourselves, how often do I express this gladness? And the answer to that second question really answers the first question. If we have gladness in our heart, we can't help but express it. So we have two qualities thus far. We have this sense of security. We have a gladness of heart. And then we have the third thing, which is a sense of satisfaction or contentment. Notice in verse 9, again, my flesh also. That is, in addition to the gladness, in addition to the rejoicing, my flesh shall rest in hope. The hope, of course, is referring to confidence. It's referring to assurance. And the word rest is referring to quiet. It's referring to peace, freedom from restlessness. I think of Mark chapter 4, verse 38, Jesus asleep on a pillow. That's a picture of peace. It's a picture of calm. It's a picture of tranquility. And you know the situation, Jesus asleep on a pillow. There's absolute bedlam and commotion and confusion on board of a ship. They're in a storm. And Jesus is in the hinder part of the ship asleep on a pillow, sleeping peacefully in the midst of chaos. That's contentment. That's satisfaction. That is a picture of all is well. I can go to sleep. All is well. It's a state of inward calm. It's a state of relief. And so we have these qualities of life. We have security. We have gladness of heart. And we have contentment and satisfaction. Who doesn't want these things? Everybody wants these things. Everybody wants a sense of security. Everybody likes to have gladness of heart. And people want a sense of contentment or a sense of satisfaction. So these are qualities of life that give us quality of life. So how do we get these things? Well, I believe this 16th Psalm tells us how. And hopefully we can identify with the thoughts of David, feel his affections throughout the Psalm. And I believe if we do, then we will have this gladness of heart. We will have this security and we'll have this contentment. So notice the first principle is there was a personal sense of a very desperate need of God. Notice verse 1, preserve me, O God. Preserve me, O God. That is, save me, O God. Keep me, O God. This is someone who realizes that God is the source of his life. But it's also the words of someone who realizes their own inability. He can't preserve himself. He can't keep himself. He can't deliver himself. So he prays, preserve me, O God. It's a cry of one who is desperate for God. Desperate for God. Preserve me, O God. The spirit and attitude of these words is God is the one that I have to have. I have to have God. The person who knows that they have to have God, that is a person that is going to have this sense of security, this gladness of heart, and this satisfaction. God is the one I must have. You see, our greatest need is not a change in our circumstances. It's not a change in the people in our lives. What we need is more God in our lives. And the more of God that we have in our lives, the greater our security. The more of God we have in our lives, the more gladness in heart that we have. The more of God we have in our lives, the more satisfied we are. So again, we have to have God. And that is the principle here. You realize that there is a desperate need for God. And we live in a day when even many of God's people want less of God in their lives. But we don't need less of God in our lives. We need more of God in our lives. That's always so. We need more of God in our lives. And when we have more of God in our lives, we have more security. We have more gladness in heart, and we rejoice more, and we have a satisfaction and a contentment. Notice also in verse 1, the second thing, there is a deep and constant trust in the Lord. He says, "For in thee, preserve me, O God, for in thee do I put my trust." Again, these are the words of someone who realizes God is my source. Here's the words of someone who realizes, I am unable. I don't have the ability. For in thee do I put my trust. That means he's coming to God. He's relying upon God. He's depending upon God. He's leaning upon God. He's cleaving to God. He's drawing to God. He's resting in God. So we must ask ourselves, how deep is our trust in the Lord? How much do I really trust the Lord? And the answer to that question would coincide to what degree do we realize God is the source of our life. The more I realize that God is the source of everything that I need, the more I'm going to trust Him. So, to what degree do I realize my inability? The more I realize my inability, the more apt I am to trust in the Lord. So the more that we trust God, the more of a sense of security we will have, and the more gladness we'll have in our hearts, and the more content and satisfied we will be. We need more of God in our lives, and we need to trust Him more. And when we do this, again, we have these other qualities. Verse 2, we notice another principle. There's an intimacy with God. In verse 2, O my soul, thou hast said unto the Lord. O my soul, thou hast said unto the Lord. Now these are the words of someone who has been deeply affected by God. It has affected his soul. It has not just affected his outward being, it's affected his soul. So, O my soul, thou hast said. He's not merely talking with his mouth, but his soul spoke unto the Lord. So there's a connection between his soul and God. His soul is moving in the direction of God. So we must ask ourselves again, how deeply does God affect my life? What effect does God have upon my life? How widespread is God's influence in my life? What is my relationship? How close of a relationship do I have with God? This is a close relationship, soul and God. The soul speaking to God. Well, one thing for sure, the closer our relationship to God, the more of a sense of security we will have. And the closer our relationship to God, the more gladness we will have in our hearts. And the more content and satisfied we will be. There's also a recognition of the Lord as master. Notice again, verse 2. Again, or thou art my Lord. Thou art my Lord. These are the words of someone who realizes I'm not my own. God has all rights over my life. Thou art my Lord. It declares His position. It declares our position. He's the owner. We belong to Him. He's the master. He's the ruler. We are His subjects. Thou art my Lord. Personal connection, personal relationship. It's a personal identification with the Lord. Thou art my Lord. There's a tone of reverence and love and attraction for him. These are words of humble submission and a willingness to stoop in the Lord's service, a desire to be controlled, a desire to be dominated by him. It's a sensitivity toward him. Thou art my Lord. And the more that is so in our life, the more of a sense of security we will have. And the more gladness of heart we will have. And the more content we will be. The more satisfied we will be in our life. Also notice verse 2, another principle. There's a proper view of our own goodness. He says, my goodness, my own personal goodness, extendeth not to thee. When he's talking about his goodness, he's speaking of his good works. And what he's saying is my good works have no bearing upon who God is. They have no bearing upon the nature of God. They do not add to God. There's nothing that you and I can add to the Lord. These are the words of someone who's very much aware that his own good works are nothing in comparison to the greatness of God. And that his own good works do not impress the Lord. God can be pleased, but we do not impress the Lord. And we see here any goodness that we have, any goodness that we have ever done, is because of God. So what you have here is the opposite of pride, the opposite of self-righteousness. And the less we have of pride and the less we have of self-righteousness, the more of a sense of security we will have, and the more gladness of heart we will have, and the more content and satisfied we will be. Also in verse 3, there's a desire to be a blessing to others. He says, but to the saints, my goodness extendeth not to thee, but to the saints that are in the earth, and to the excellent in whom is all my delight. He has a desire to be a blessing to the saints of God. And the more that we desire to be a blessing, rather than receiving a blessing, the more security we have, the more of a sense of security we have, and the more gladness we have in our hearts, and the more satisfied we'll be. Another principle in verse 4, he says, their sorrows shall be multiplied that hasten after another god. Their drink offerings of blood will I not offer, nor take up their names, that is, the names of their gods, into my lips. What he's saying is I'm going to avoid all foolish pursuits. In other words, God is the exclusive object of his life. And again, if we practice this principle, there's a greater sense of security. There's more gladness in our hearts, and there's satisfaction. We see also God is the substance of life. Notice verse 5. The Lord is my portion of mine inheritance and of my cup. That's in direct contrast to the idolaters that he mentioned in verse 4. These are the words of someone who realizes that God is my all. God is all that I need. He's my satisfaction. He's my fulfillment. He's my contentment. He's my happiness. He's my enough. And he says, he's the portion of mine inheritance and of my cup, what I partake of. God is what he wanted. God is what he wanted. And we have to ask ourselves, what is it that we want? What is it that we want in life? The only correct answer is God. We want God. We want more of God in our lives. Not less, but more. And again, the more we have, the more we realize that God is our portion, the more of a sense of security we have, the more gladness we have, the more satisfaction we have. If you read verses 5 and 6, you see there's the realization that he's blessed of God. He knew that God had blessed his life. And when you and I realize we're blessed of God, every single day, I am blessed of the Lord. Every day. And the more we realize that we are blessed, the more of a sense of security we have, the more gladness of heart we have, and the more content and satisfied we will be. We need to ask ourselves, what do we spend more time thinking and talking about? Burdens or blessings? I'm not saying there's anything wrong with talking about our burdens. We're to take our burdens to the Lord. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with sharing our burdens with others. But how about sharing our blessings with others? What do we think upon the most, our burdens or our blessings? What do we talk about the most, our burdens or our blessings? Well, the more we realize that we're blessed of God, many of our burdens go away. Many of our burdens aren't burdens. So again, the more we realize we're blessed of God, the greater our sense of security. Notice verse 7. I will bless the Lord. I will bless the Lord who hath given me counsel. My reins also instruct me in the night seasons. Again, these are the words of someone who has a desire to praise him. He has a desire to thank him. Why? Because he realizes, I'm blessed of God. I'm blessed of God. And therefore, I will bless the Lord. I will thank him. And then he talks about what God has done for him. But there is a desire in his heart, because he feels that he's so blessed of God, there's a desire in his heart to pay tribute to God. There's a desire in his heart to rave about God. There's a desire in his heart to honor God, to exalt God, to adore God, to magnify God, to just thank God. These are the words of someone who realizes that God has spared him from disaster. Notice what it says. It says, given me counsel, my reins also instruct me in the night or the dark seasons. How many times God's counsel has spared us from disaster? How many times God's counsel has spared us from bringing disaster into our lives? You and I would bring much disaster into our lives if it were not for God's counsel. And the psalmist thinks upon these things. He just says, I want to praise the Lord. I want to thank God. And again, the more we do so, there's a sense of security. Thankfulness and praise sort of feeds this sense of security. It feeds this gladness of heart. It feeds this satisfaction. And then notice another principle in verse 8. He says, I have set the Lord always before me. I have set the Lord always, always, no matter what else is going on. I have set the Lord always before me, where he can be seen. It's an acknowledgement. It's an acute awareness. God is there. God is here. He's very much aware of the presence of God. He sees God. He's focused upon God. He's pursuing God. I will set the Lord always before me. It's bringing God to the forefront. It's God filling the horizon of his vision. It's what he sees. He sees God. And the more you and I see God, the more of a sense of security we have. The more of a gladness of heart we have. The more satisfaction we have. I have set the Lord always before me. It's as if He's saying, Lord, You first, and I will follow. I will follow. Set the Lord always before us. And he's describing the reality of God. And to enlarge upon this, He says, He is at my right hand. He is at my right hand. All through the Scriptures, the right hand is a place of significance. It's a place of importance. We see He's enjoying the presence of God. And in verse 11, we see that there are pleasures at the right hand of God. And the more that God is a vivid reality, the more of a priority that He is. And again, the right hand is a picture of priority. The more of a priority God is, the more we see God, the more we feel His presence, the more we're aware of His presence, the greater our sense of security, the greater our gladness of heart, and the greater our contentment and satisfaction that we have in our lives. And then lastly, verses 10 and 11, for Thou wilt not leave my soul in hell or in the grave, neither wilt Thou suffer Thine Holy One to see corruption. For Thou wilt not. Then notice verse 11, Thou wilt show me the path of life. This is faith concerning the future. He knew that God had blessed him, and he knew that God would continue to bless him. God has been everything that he needs, and he knew that God would continue to be everything that he needs. Our measure of faith speaks of where the Lord is in our life. You see, we talk about lack of faith, and that's a real problem. But what we need to realize is when faith is weak, it's a barometer of where the Lord is in our life. It's where He is in our life. And the greater our faith, the more God is in our life, the more of a sense of security we have, and the more gladness we have in our hearts, and the more content and satisfied we will be. So there is such a thing as a sense of God-given security. This is a security that money can't give. People talk about making their family secure after they're gone. And we're not condemning that. But you must realize that there is a God-given sense of security that is different than financial security. There is a God-given gladness of heart. And there is a God-given contentment and satisfaction. And there are God-given principles for having these qualities in our lives. And these principles